Good morning. If you're visiting with us, thank you so much for checking us out. We're so glad that you're here. My name is Stephen. I'm the lead pastor here at Life Church, and we're in we're late in a series called Christmas at the Movies, where what we've been doing is we've been taking a look at different Christmas classics to highlight various biblical truths. Whenever anybody preaches at our church, we use personal stories to highlight biblical truths. Jesus did the same thing, telling stories, we call them parables, to teach people truths about God, about our world, and about humanity. And so we've been looking at different Christmas classics because every movie tells a story, and every story actually is trying to teach or drive home different principles. And so this week, the movie we're taking a look at is The Santa Claus. Check it out.
Disappointed children around the world.
He doesn't want the job.
It was a dream.
But it's growing on him.
I've gained 45 pounds in a week.
Now he's getting into the spirit.
There are a lot of kids that believe me. I want some ballet slippers.
And getting ready for the biggest night of his life.
How could I have done this without you, Charlie?
You couldn't.
Walt Disney presents a timeless tale that will warm your heart.
It will be the balls.
I love you, son.
Lift your spirits. Make you believe.
You really are
Santa Claus.
Pretty cool, huh?
Share the merriment and the magic.
Seeing isn't believing. Believing is seeing.
Tim Allen.
Santa.
The Santa Claus.
So The Santa Claus is a movie about a successful businessman named Scott Calvin, who one Christmas Eve, he has him and his son home. His son is at the age where he's trying to figure out, is there a Santa? Am I going to believe in him or not anymore? And so they hear a noise, a clatter, a word you only use around Christmas, right? A clatter on the roof. And so they go to check it out, and Scott walks outside. He's just still in his PJs, even though there's snow out, so it's freezing cold. He looks up and he sees a figure on the roof dressed like Santa. And he's going, what sort of Christmas crusader is up, like sort of vigilante figure? Like this is just a really like lame version of Batman, just a Santa Claus out there. Like who is this guy on my roof? And so he yells up to the Santa Claus, which startles the guy on his roof, who then falls down off the roof on the ground and dies. A little heavy for a kid's movie, right? And I was thinking about this too, like, what do you do if you're the dad in that scenario? Your kid has been struggling with whether or not he wants to believe in Santa, and so your kid runs out and goes, Dad, Dad, is there a Santa? And you're looking at the body, like this chalk outline on front lawn, you go, well, I can confidently tell you there was a Santa. Daddy killed him. Like, what do you do, right? And so he tries to find some ID on the guy because he's going, man, I got to call the police, tell them what happened, report this. And so he looks on the body and he finds this card that says Santa Claus. And on the back, the card says, put on the suit and the reindeer will know what to do. And partially because the body all of a sudden disappears, which is freaky, and then because his son is encouraging him to put on the suit, and because it's cold, and because that's what the card said to do, Scott Calvin puts on the suit. All of a sudden, a ladder appears in front of their house. They climb it up. They go into the sleigh, and they actually start delivering presents to the entire world. And Scott does what any of us would do. Figures the next morning, that was just a crazy dream. I'm hoping that was a crazy dream. What did we eat? What did we smoke before we did that? Like, I'm hoping that was a crazy dream, right? And so he goes through the rest of his year just trying to pretend none of that happened, while the entire rest of the year he's struggling with this reality that he's becoming more and more like Santa Claus. And he's struggling with the responsibility that comes with being Santa Claus. As followers of Jesus, we actually have a really similar struggle. That once you put on the suit or you place your faith in Jesus, you're not just faced with believing something different, but suddenly you're faced with a new type of life. That with Jesus comes new responsibilities, new values, a new mission, a new purpose, a totally new life. Just like Scott Calvin put on the suit, and it wasn't just a suit, he actually slowly was becoming more and more like the Santa Claus before him, until Santa and Christmas was affecting every area of his life. Followers of Jesus are actually called to allow Jesus to influence every area of their lives so that Jesus can be seen in every aspect of your life. And so maybe you're here and you've been going to church for a long time. You put on the suit, but you've been struggling with that level of responsibility, this feeling that I feel like Jesus is calling me to a little bit more. I feel like he wants more of me, but I'm a little nervous about like how that's radically gonna affect the life that I've built for myself. And so you put on the suit, but you haven't been sure about stepping fully into the life. You stepped into faith, but you weren't sure about the living by faith. Or maybe you're here and you're here because somebody just invited you. By the way, we're so glad that you're here, but you're just trying to figure this whole thing out. And you hear at church, we're talking about Jesus, but you've been trained and this is good to ask, so what's the catch? Like if somebody's gonna ask me to put my entire life into something, I wanna know what's attached to that, right? That's a fair question to ask. And so what I wanna do this morning is I wanna address that type of concern. I wanna address that type of feeling. Because I think that makes sense. Like if I'm going to put my entire self into something, I wanna know what the catch is. And so there's this guy named Paul who wrote a lot of the New Testament, and he wrote these two letters to this church that was located in a town called Corinth. Now, funny thing about Paul's letters to this church, most of the letters that Paul wrote to a church were only like 4 or 5 chapters, and he just wrote one of them. To the Corinthians, he wrote two letters which were like 15 chapters each. Like they had a lot of stuff to work on, which should just tell you churches aren't perfect. Church people aren't perfect. If you're looking for a church that is perfect and you find it, don't join it because you'll ruin it. Like you won't find any perfection here, but luckily we know perfection. We don't claim to be perfection, but we know him and his name is Jesus. And so Paul starts to instruct this church. The first letter he writes is a bunch of correction. Like, hey, you probably shouldn't be doing this. And there is stuff that even if you don't go to church, you're like, you shouldn't be doing that. And then the second letter was a letter of instruction and inspiration, trying to inspire these people to step into the life that Jesus had afforded them because they loved Jesus, but they were struggling with what's the catch? What's attached to all of this? What's the type of life that I really step into? And so in chapter 5, starting in verse 15, Paul says this, talking about Jesus, he died for everyone so that those who received his new life would no longer live for themselves. Instead, they would live for Christ, who died and was raised for them. That's the first catch, the first thing that changes, the first thing that's affected when you give your life to Jesus is this: followers of Jesus no longer live for themselves. See, I think that there's something intrinsically written on the human spirit that says to us, it's better to do things for others. Like, it's good to do things, to do good things for other people. Like, all of us would be like, yeah, like, that makes sense. No matter what culture you're from, no matter what part of the world somebody's from, there is this code in the human spirit that says, man, it is good to do good things for other people. Even if you don't celebrate Christmas, you appreciate generosity. Like, every culture has some form of admiring that trait, admiring that aspiration, admiring that virtue or value. Man, it is good to do good things for other people, whether it's represented in hospitality, actual gift giving, or encouragement. But there's this other part of us that, let's be real, every Christmas you struggle with, yeah, it's good to give people good things, but when you're buying gifts for your family, you're going, so how close are we? Like, are we impulse buy at Marshall's close? are we just gift card close? Or are we like personalized gift I ordered ahead of time close? Because as much as we know that it's good to give and to live for others, to serve them, there's this other part of us that, if we're really honest, feels like, man, if I live my life serving other people, does that actually mean a little less life for me? In Scott Calvin's story, he was a salesman, he was a marketer, he worked for a toy company. And so every Christmas, what happened was he actually would benefit from other people's gift giving, that he was the core recipient of the work that he did, that if he made the best toy, other people would buy it and he would profit off of it. And so in his mind, toys were a tool. The gifts that everybody would give each other was a tool to get something out of, that it was actually a selfish tool for him. But when he put on the suit, suddenly he looked at toys in a whole different way. Suddenly they were actually a tool to be used to spread Christmas joy and Christmas spirit. And what I want us to realize is that everything that God has given us is actually given to us for a purpose, and that is to give to others, to serve others, to use as a tool, to share joy, to share love, to share some kindness and hope with the world around us. See, when you get a gift for yourself, all you end up doing is you get a gift for yourself. Like if you're in line at Dunk's, you get a coffee for yourself, what'd you get? You got a coffee for yourself. But there's this crazy dynamic when we choose to actually live serving other people, when we live for Christ through loving our neighbor, that suddenly we get to be agents of creating something totally different, totally new. That when I get a coffee, not just for myself, but I give the clerk, the person behind that register, a $10 bill, and I say, hey, person behind me, this is for whatever they're getting. You keep the tip. Suddenly, what do? We got a coffee for ourselves. We got a coffee for the person behind us. But then we also gave that cash register person a little hope in humanity. We gave them a connection. Man, there's actually good people out there. That's awesome. We gave the person behind us a little love. Man, somebody actually cared enough about me just as a human. They didn't even know me, but they gave me something. Like, what if the thing that somebody needed hope in before they placed their faith in Jesus, they need to place their faith in another person? They need to be able to trust somebody again. And that would actually open the door for them to be able to actually place their faith and trust in Jesus. Like, they're actually going, man, I haven't seen a whole lot of faith, a whole lot of love around me. So, like, I'm not sure that, like, God would even love me, because I don't know if people do. And then you took the chance to say, you know what, I'm going to actually serve somebody else, and suddenly go, wow, that love from that person's making me believe that there might actually be love out there. I might actually be worth loving or caring for. See, the life that Jesus gives us, it's not, like, if you were to ask Scott Calvin a question, like if you could ask a movie character anything, I don't know if you'd ask Scott Calvin something. My first question would be like, Thanos, why? Right? But if you were able to ask Scott Calvin any question and you asked him, man, what do you feel like becoming Santa took from you? I doubt that he would say becoming Santa took all of my success. I would actually probably say that he said becoming Santa Claus actually freed me from a life of selfishness. It freed me from a life where I was just living for myself and only giving to myself. The life that Jesus gives us, as Paul says, he says, he died for everyone so that those who received this new life would no longer live for themselves. Instead, they would live for Christ. When we actually live for Christ and we serve other people, what we're doing is we're freeing ourselves from living a life that the end goal is just ourselves. That we're actually freed to live a life that actually represents and stands for and gives other people hope in Jesus. It's a freeing life. Paul continues verse 16. He says, so, meaning like everything that happened before that, so with that in mind, like, so because you chose to live for Christ, no longer just for yourself, we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. How differently we know him now. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone, and the new life has begun. I think if we're really honest, we all have little filters through which we evaluate people. Like if you're an athlete, Maybe the way that you look at people is through their sports background or their fitness level. If you're an academic type person, maybe you kind of read the room and see who your people are that you'd want to connect with by how many letters they have before or after their name. Doctor, MD, PhD, ADHD, like all those different letters that somebody could have. You're like, who's the most educated person in the room? Like, I'm going to talk to that person. Or if you're just kind of pride yourself on being like kind of an everyman, you're just looking around the room being like, who's just chill? Because sometimes that person's really rare. Like, that's going to be my person, right? Like, I don't want to go after a go-getter. Like, I don't want to hang out with them. They stress me out. So I'm just going to find the chill people in the room. But for all of us, I think there's a universal evaluator that we have for people, and that's their actions. Like the person who's kind to you, that's your type of person, right? The person who speaks well of you, yeah, that's my type of person. But the person who cuts me off or publicly supports the opposite political party, they rank lower than my dog. Like, I don't want to talk to them. I don't even kick my dog. I kick them. I don't have a dog. I wouldn't kick it. I don't know why I added that. I wouldn't, though, just so you know. I almost winked. I don't have a dog. Anyways, we all have some way that we evaluate people, and the universal one is their actions. If you're Santa, even Santa does this. He looks at people and he looks at their actions and he goes, naughty, nice, naughty, nice. You're in one category or the other. Apparently all of you are naughty, naughty, nice. But so he evaluates people, but thank God he has a different type of filter. Actually, Paul says we've stopped evaluating others from a human point of view. He says that thanks to Jesus, we've been freed to see other people differently. And there are two ways that we're actually able to see people differently thanks to Jesus. See, the second thing that is affected by our faith in Jesus is that we no longer evaluate people from a human point of view. We see people differently. The first way we see people differently is that we see them for the value that God has already placed on them. Like, if everybody's created in God's image, then they all have inherent value, regardless of how they've treated me, regardless of their past, regardless of their political affiliation, regardless if they root for the same sports team as me. Everybody has a huge amount of value placed on their life, inherent value. But it goes even further than that. Ephesians 2 says this: God saved you by his grace when you believed. And you can't take credit for this. It's a gift from God. Salvation is not a reward for the good things we've done, so none of us can boast about it. If I can understand that my standing with God is not because of how good I am, but it's because of how good God is, then why would I let someone else's standing with me be based on how good or bad they were to me? Like, if Jesus forgave me for everything, then why would I view somebody as lower because they didn't treat me exactly the way I wanted to be treated? Jesus didn't come to earth because I was good. Jesus didn't give his life up because I was good. Jesus didn't offer salvation because I was good enough. Jesus didn't teach for 3 years because I was good enough. He did all of those things because God is good enough. And now he's filled us with his goodness. So why, if God didn't take that away because of my bad, why would I take the value I place on somebody else's life away because they weren't nice to me? See, we look at people differently now. That we no longer look at people through just a human point of view. Were they nice to me? Were they mean to me? Are they good? Are they bad? Naughty? Nice? Are they my type of person? No, every type of person is my type of person because every type of person is God's type of person because they're human and they have value. And the second way that this actually changes how we look at people is now we see people through what God is doing in their lives. He says, at one time we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. How differently we know him now. See, there is thousands of people who witnessed Jesus' entire ministry, and many of them didn't actually look at him from a divine perspective. They just chose to, man, he's just a good teacher, or he's just maybe a heretic in their eyes. But they just evaluated him on how good of a speaker he was, if he was saying what they agreed with. They were looking at him from a human point of view. And now Paul is saying, but for those of you who actually have placed your faith in Jesus, how differently you know him now. Like, if you believe in Jesus, he's not just a historical figure to you. If you believe in Jesus, he's not just some good teacher. If you believe in Jesus, then he's not just some icon or symbol of what we hope people would actually act like towards each other. He's actually alive. He's working in your life. He's God himself. He's speaking to you. That completely changes everything once you identify there's a divine quality to who Jesus is. But if that faith has changed how you see Jesus and what he did, then why wouldn't that type of faith change how you see what other people are doing in their situations? See, thanks to Jesus, I don't evaluate people from a human point of view. My job's not to just to judge them for their life situation or where life has brought them. Man, they must be there because they deserve it. Actually, maybe they're in that situation. Maybe they're in a rough situation because God is working in their life. He's trying to get their attention, and maybe he wants me to speak into their situation. So my job isn't just to tell them, man, you're here because God's angry at you. No, actually, maybe you're here because God's trying to get your attention. Now he's using me to actually speak into your life because he's saying, could somebody please talk to this person, because I've been trying to talk to them. They're not getting any, they're not looking at me yet. I want them to know me, and I need your help. Who's going to speak to them? Rather than judge them, who's the first person who's actually going to step out, reach out, and love them? Paul continues, verse 18. All of this, the fact that we can see people from a different point of view, the fact that we have faith that we can actually trust in a God who's very real, who really came down to really give up his life so that we could really place our faith and really have an eternity with him and really experience a connection with our Creator in this life. All of this is a gift from God who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. For God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, no longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. So we're Christ's ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. This is the last thing that changes. This is the last catch. Be ready for this. It's followers of Jesus choose to continue Jesus' work. This is the biggest and least convenient step of all. Because it's one thing to like the life that Jesus lived. It's another thing to live the life that Jesus lived. I think all of us like Christmas. Like, even if there's certain things you don't like about Christmas, there's something that you do like. Like, maybe you're the type of person who loves finding that perfect gift. You're just like, that's a challenge that just excites me. Like, you search out all year trying to find the perfect gift for each person in your family. Like, it's just a challenge. It's a little puzzle. Like, that just gets you going. Maybe you like snow. Not me, but, like, maybe you do. Maybe you like just kind of the feeling that Christmas has, like everything's warm and cozy, hot chocolate is everywhere, it's awesome. You like the fireplace. My wife and I don't have a fireplace, so we just put the fireplace thing on our TV, and then we turn the lights down, it's all cozy, we put on some music, get under a blanket, it's all romantic and nice, and then our newborn starts crying. But like there's something you like about Christmas, and I think all of us enjoy different aspects of Christmas. But for all of us, like, it's one thing to like Christmas. It's a whole other thing to be responsible to make Christmas happen for everybody else. And that's where Scott Calvin was. Like, he liked Christmas. He made a lot of money on Christmas. He was a toy guy. There were certain things he enjoyed about it. But then suddenly, when he put on the suit, he was challenged to make Christmas happen for everybody around him. I think a lot of times we look at Jesus the same way. We like Jesus. I like a lot of things about him. But I don't know if I want to be responsible for introducing other people to him. I don't know if I want to be responsible for sharing Jesus and helping other people find him. Paul continues, and he says, for God made Christ, who never sinned. And that doesn't mean that God made, like, created Jesus. It's actually God made Christ to be the offering for our sin. That's just commas there. It's like they decided together that Jesus would be the offering for our sin. So God made Christ, who never sinned. What is sin? It's disobedience to God and selfishness towards other people. We're all guilty of it, me included. But he said, God made Christ, who never sinned, to be the offering for our sins so that we could be made right with God through Christ. I think anybody in the room, if you have placed your faith in Jesus, you go, yes, that is such a great reality. I love living in that reality. But he doesn't stop there. He continues and he says, as God's partners. Isn't that crazy that God wants to partner with you? Like, I feel so inadequate. I'm like, if there was a bunch of resumes up, like applications up, I feel like the last person that God would want to partner with. Because I think about all the dumb stuff I do. I think about like the dumb videos I watch on YouTube of like epic fails and stuff. And like I'm snorting laughing, watching somebody like fall over. I'm just like, God wants to partner with me, even though I just did that. As God's partners, even still, we're partners with God. He says, we beg you not to accept this marvelous gift that you would say, I love living in this reality, that I have a connection with my creator. But he goes, don't accept this marvelous gift. I'm begging you not to accept this gift that you've been given of God's kindness and then ignore it. He says, I beg you. You know, this isn't written to pastors. There might have been a pastor in Corinth, but this isn't just for pastors aren't professional Christians. Like, I don't get paid to live out my Christian faith. Like, my job is actually to help train the church to also do ministry. Like, we're all in this together. So it's not like I beg some of you. It's I beg any of you who would say, I enjoy the reality that I live in thanks to Jesus, to not accept that marvelous gift that you've been given, this new life. You put on the suit, man, this is a nice suit. You put on the faith, man, I love faith in Jesus. Don't accept that and then just ignore it. Scott Calvin is out on his front lawn, has a decision. Do I put on the suit or not? Can I just say, somebody has to put on the suit. Why not you? Like, somebody needs to make Christmas happen for everybody else. Somebody has to be responsible to share Jesus with their neighbor. Somebody has to choose, you know what? I'm going to start living my life not just for myself, but for those around me. I'm going to live my life for Christ, which means loving my neighbor as myself, loving the people that other people would find difficult to love, but being willing to extend myself to go and do that because somebody needs to. So why not me? Why not you? It says, I beg you, for the sake of your children, don't accept this gift and ignore it. For the sake of your neighbor, don't accept this gift and ignore it. For the sake of your family that you're going to see later this week, don't accept this gift and ignore it. For the sake of your coworkers, don't accept this gift and ignore it. For the sake of the generation coming after you, don't accept this gift and ignore it. For the sake of your community, your neighborhood, your best friend, your roommate, don't accept everything that you've loved about a relationship with Jesus, just like Scott couldn't accept everything that he loved about Christmas and ignore it. Somebody has to put on the suit. So will you? I want you to bow your heads, close your eyes. Jesus, I thank you for who you are. I thank you for the reality that you actually have given us freedom from having to live a life that's just for ourselves, that we can actually be a part of creating something entirely new for people around us, generating a little hope, a little love, a little faith, a little joy around the holidays, but not just around the holidays, for the rest of the year, for anybody that we encounter, that when we choose to not just live for ourselves, but be generous with everything that you've given us, using our life as actually a tool to generate more life for other people, We don't just have to live for ourselves. Our story can make an eternal impact on the lives of the people around us. I thank you for the fact that we don't have to just look at people the same way that we used to. The same way we don't look at you, Jesus, the same way that we used to before we came to faith. That I can actually see God's hand all over everything that you were doing, but now I can see God's hand all over everybody else's life and the way he's trying to get their attention. So now I can actively be a part of sharing the good news of Jesus. Maybe you're in this room and you don't know Jesus, but you're hearing this and you go, yeah, I want a connection with my creator. I want to experience that type of love. I want you to know you can experience that right now, today. This is what I want you to know. Jesus lived a perfect life to be an example to us of what it could look like if somebody would live their whole life in connection with God. Then he died on a cross, an unjust death for our sin. What sin? Disobedience to God and selfishness towards other people. We're all guilty of it, me included. Then he rose from the dead to break the power of sin and death so you don't have to live a life that's narrated by fear, anxiety, depression, hurt, pain anymore, but your life story could be told from the all-powerful creator of the universe. You could have a connection with him today. If that's where you're at, I simply want you to pray this. Jesus, I give you my life. Amen. I got one last thing for you. Every week, what we're going to start doing is what we call a wrap-up. And I want to help all of us take a step of faith each week, depending on where you are. And so maybe you're here and you prayed that prayer, Jesus, I give you my life. All I want you to do is I simply want you to text all in to that number. We're going to leave that number on the screen while I'm doing this. That way you can take a photo of it, even if you can't type it in right now. But if you prayed that prayer, we want to connect with you. We want to make sure that you know just how cared for you are and that we want to help you on this faith journey. So if you could text all into that number, that would be great. We're also trying to avoid any like handing out things. We used to do the connection cards, but I know during COVID people are a little nervous to like touch more stuff or who's touched this pen before me? Did they wipe their nose with their hand right before they did it? Scratch an itch with the pen? Probably not. That'd be weird. You just got ink everywhere. Anyways, or if you're new, this is your first week, just text new right here. We want to connect with you. We want you to be able to be plugged into our church, and we want to know how to best serve you and how you would actually like to serve in this mission as God's partners to reaching other people who don't know Jesus. Or if you're really interested in serving, text serve. We got two services coming up. We got a lot of things that we're working on. We need all hands on deck. Paul wasn't writing just to pastors. He wasn't writing just to people who felt a call to ministry. He was writing to anybody who would place their faith in Jesus, saying, man, as God's partners, do not accept this marvelous gift of Jesus and ignore it. Church is a team sport. It's best when we're working as a team. All right. The band's going to continue. We're going to do two more songs. And let's get out of here. Have a Merry Christmas.